We'll call the meeting to order. We do not have a quorum, but we're going to get started on time. A couple things we like to recognize folks, as most people know. The individuals that we have in the pipeline, if you will, to be recognized for their special contribution for agriculture, some of their friends called and they would like to be here when we honor those folks, and they asked, they couldn't make it here this week, and so we are going to delay the recognition until their friends and family can be here. So again, just a fun little thing that we like to do to recognize special people in agriculture all across the state. I will, before we move Representative Swazinski's bill, since we are waiting for a quorum, kind of the lay of the land, if you will, friends, we're going to be hearing these bills, obviously holding most of them over for possible inclusion. Over Easter break, we're going to make Mr. Knisely stay here, and we'll be here working on putting the bill together, and then have the markup shortly the week after, right after Easter, correct, Mark? Yes. And
the end of that week.
Yes, the end of the week or the following Tuesday, and then the budgets are beginning to come out. I think we'll have the finals. Is that tomorrow? As far as our final budget numbers.
Today.
So then I'll be able to share a little bit more with everybody. After that, I'm going to honor the wishes of leadership, just kind of keep everything pretty close to our vest, if you will, for right now until we work out the final details. If we, how about we get started? Representative Swazinski, would anybody like to, oh wait, we don't have a quorum yet, so we'll hold off on that, and then we'll let you make the offer. If you want to just present your bill.
Sure.
Go ahead. And
Thank you, Chair Hamilton, and members of House Finance Committee. Appreciate the opportunity to come before you this morning. We've got House File 1613 before you. House File 1613 is essentially the Noxious Weed Grant Program, where we appropriate $500,000. In year 16, and $500,000 in year 17 from the general fund into the noxious weed invasive plant species assistant program. And essentially those dollars are going to be available to local units of government to help deal with noxious weeds. On the list, we have approximately 29 different weed varieties that are on the list, and that is what we are after, to kind of keep those at bay. A percentage of those are not necessarily have a strong foothold in the state of Minnesota, and we want to keep it that way. And I have some good folks here to speak on behalf of the bill, folks from the Nature Conservancy and from a few cities throughout the metropolitan area and rural areas, to speak on behalf of this bill and the appropriation that it would consume. So with that, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Swazinski. Please state your name and who you represent for the record and begin.
Mr. Chair, my name is Steve Chaplin. I'm with the Nature Conservancy. I'm also a member of the Noxious Weed Advisory Committee with the Department of Agriculture. When the Noxious Weed Law was originally passed in 1895, it was designed to protect the citizens of Minnesota from injurious effects of noxious weeds. At that time, most of the noxious weed were crop pests, things that were found in crop fields. But in more recent history, we've got a lot of new herbicide technologies, especially Roundup-ready crops, that have basically eliminated most of the those weeds that were found in crop fields into, you know, less of a problem. At the same time, we've got a lot of new species coming in, and so we have just as many noxious weeds as we ever had, but now they tend to be found in pastures, in roadsides, organic crop fields, recreational lands, and restored conservation lands. And there are more arriving all of the time. Now, in 2002, there were budget cuts in the Department of Agriculture that had forced the elimination of the noxious weed program, placing all of the responsibilities of enforcement and control on local governments. However, there's no specific funding that to help pay for that work that the local governments are doing.
Excuse me. We do have a quorum, so I'd just like to officially call the meeting to order. And Representative Daniels, you'd like to move the bill and put it before us.
Yes. I'd like to move HF 1613 to possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
All right. Thank you, Representative Daniels. We have the bill before us. I'm sorry. Please proceed.
So in 2009, there was a major revision of the noxious weed law to address some of these shortcomings. One of the provisions was to establish the Noxious Weed Advisory Committee that I'm a member of, which provides a streamlined way for the Commissioner of Agriculture to list and delist species from the noxious weed list. The handout in your package shows what the current list of noxious weed species. There's 29 species. You may seem like there's an awful lot of it, but as Representative Swedzinski mentioned, all of those on the eradicate list, the top list of 12 species, are either hardly in the state or not yet in the state, but we know they're bad actors and they're coming, and so that we'd like to stay on top of them and be able to keep them from becoming a problem in Minnesota. The second thing the 2009 law did was to create the noxious weed and invasive plant species account within the agricultural fund. The purpose of this account was to create a grant program in the MDA that for grants to counties, municipalities, and other weed management entities to assist the assist with weed management problems and to respond to new infestations. Unfortunately, there's never been any funding for this account. Now, in further west and in other states where they have both an advisory committee and an assistant account, there's been shown to be greatly effective in controlling noxious weeds from entering the state or becoming problems in those other states. So our need is large and growing. More and more invasive species are coming all of the time. Local government sources to be able to pay for all of this is getting to be more and more of an issue. There's neither the staff nor the budget to be able to deal with a lot of these programs. So state assistance would be, you know, at this point is essential. The lack of funding so far has been has created a reactive approach. We don't get to get on top of what the issues are, and that's something that we want to be able to do is to start dealing with these species before it's too late. Now, all the members of the Noxious Weed Committee, and I'll mention just some of them, the Minnesota Association of County Ag Inspectors, the Minnesota Association of Townships, the League of Minnesota Cities, the Soil and Water Conservation Districts Association, Association of County Land Commissioners, the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association, the Minnesota Crop Improvement Association, Minnesota Timber Industries, Minnesota Farmers Union, and the Nature Conservancy are all members and are strongly supportive of this bill to get funding for this. Now, from a personal perspective, the Nature Conservancy devotes a lot of resources to trying to manage and control noxious weed and other invasive species on our preserves. None of this money will go to the Nature Conservancy for work on our lands, but we are greatly concerned on the adjoining lands, on the private lands and roadsides and local public lands that where these species are a problem. And if they're a problem there, they will shortly be a problem for, you know, our preserves as well. So it's for that reason that we strongly support this addition to this the noxious weed assistance account, and really to, you know, to increase or to prevent the significant impact on biological diversity and the preservation of natural resources. So I will leave it like that and turn this over now to our second testifier, Joe Enfield.
All right, thank you. Once again, please state your name for the record and begin.
Mr. Chair, board members, my name is Joseph Enfield. I'm with Carver County Environmental Services. I'm a senior environmentalist there and also the county ag inspector. And I'm here to represent the Minnesota Association of County Agricultural Inspectors.
Welcome.
Thank you. The funding of this account would greatly allow the county ag inspectors across the state to do their job more effectively. We see now most of the programs are unfunded. This is going to allow us to use that money to get, you know, boots on the ground, control and eradication of local weed issues. We work with our local weed inspectors, which are mayors and township officials, and working on specific issues in their area. It'll also help us work with them to set up plans for dealing with weed issues. And we feel it also will kind of put more of a level playing field for all the counties as far as having this money available to deal with the weed issues.
Thank you. Members, any questions for the testifiers? So, Representative Anderson, Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the testifier, I didn't catch your name, the county weed inspector, the county ag inspector.
Enfield.
This is a good program, but I think it could be made better. And what I'm getting at is the timing when you see, for example, some thistles going to seed and you send out notices. A lot of times it's too late to stop those thistles from going to seed. Any suggestions on how to hurry that process up to get these weeds taken down before they go to seed?
Mr. Enfield.
Commissioner, or members of the commission, a lot of it is would fall into some pre-planning, which again would allow us some time and money to get out and do mapping. GPS capabilities now, I mean, you know, with fishing everywhere, everybody's got a handheld, we can start identifying these locations and working with contract sprayers and our local officials, we can get out there and try and get ahead of the issue before it goes to seed.
Representative Anderson, follow up.
No, Mr. Chair, I would strongly agree with that we need to, some of these cases, be proactive and stop these weeds before it's too late.
Thank you. Any other questions for the testifiers? I have a question, I guess. It was a couple years ago we heard some testimony from some farmers up in northern Minnesota, and they had a concern about state land and the obnoxious weeds were not being dealt with on the state land. Maybe you said it in your testimony. How can we work to make sure DNR land or managed land and others are held to the same levels as the farmers, the counties, the townships, et cetera?
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, the Department of Natural Resources and MnDOT, as a county ag inspector, I am the enforcement authority, if you will. So part of that is having the time and working with them and addressing their particular weed issues. I don't see this, or as an association, we don't see this money being used to deal with their lands. This is dealing with, you know, our local township and private lands.
So, Mr. Enfield, do you think it would help if we gave a granted authority to townships and counties to fine the DNR in the event they do not hold themselves to the same standards and the counties need to go out there and enforce it or take care of it? Would you like to phone a friend?
I've got
it. So Representative Fabian's all fired up. He loves this debate.
Well, we do have a mechanism to deal with enforcement. We have the local weed notifications, and then we will partner with Department of Ag as far as going through the process when we get those issues. And I believe there's Department of Ag representation that may want to add to that.
And I think he's, I don't know if he wants to get in the middle of this one. So, yeah. Well, so we're, Representative Fabian, would you like to comment on that at all?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. The issue is one that simmered around up in my part of the state for a long time, because we do have a very, very significant ag sector that does have lots and lots of borders with state land, and it is an issue. You know, if by accident you were to spray on state land as a private landowner, you know, that's against the rules too. So you're absolutely right. There's a lot of frustration, and I do think that DNR should be responsible, or as you suggest, the counties and the townships. But an easy way to go about, at least on the margins, is just allowing the local landowners to spray out the Canadian thistles and, you know, whatever else is growing there that's a noxious weed. So I appreciate your comment. Yes. Oh,
thank you, Representative Fabian. And I think maybe what we could do is carry a bill. I'll work with you, Representative Fabian, to allow the counties and the townships to fine the DNR in order to fund control of those obnoxious weeds. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, as I recall, I think you had a bill that did that a couple years ago. And we worked on that, and as I recall, the DNR assured us that they would try to do a better job. And I mean, they have a big job. They have a lot of land to take care of, and growing. That they would work with us, and gave us, I think, some contact numbers to get a hold of if we had seen weed problems. But you had the bill to work with that, and I thank you for doing that. And we might want to look at that again, at least have them report to us if they've made any improvements.
Okay. I believe we have another testifier. State your name for the record and begin, please.
Good morning, Chair Hamilton and members of the committee. My name is Tim Power. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association. I just wanted to stick my oar in the water and say that we are also a member of the Noxious Weed Advisory Committee, representing both horticultural growers, and of course horticulture is agriculture, and also dealers who are selling products. And we absolutely support not only the work of the Noxious Weed Advisory Committee, but the funding of this grant program. I just wanted to make that very clear, that our industry does support it.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Powers. Any questions for the testifier? Representative Miller, you have a question.
Not a question for the testifier, but I just want to clarify something, Mr. Chair, before that. I'm on Legacy Committee, and we're actually having discussions about lands purchased with legacy money, understanding the actual cost of that land includes long-term. And so it's been in a couple other areas, but that's perhaps a good idea for us to discuss also, that if there's some long-term care of noxious weeds with legacy lands, that we should look into the expenses included in that as well. So we'll do that.
All right. Thank you, Representative Miller. Any other questions for the testifiers? Does anybody else want to testify for or against this bill? Please state your name for the record and who you represent. Begin, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ken Sulem with the Minnesota Association of Townships.
Welcome.
And I'll be very, very brief. We are fully, fully supportive of this effort. It has been a longstanding policy of the association to reestablish funding at the state level to help with the enforcement. Weed inspection is actually one mandate that we lobbied to keep, if you will, which is a very, very strange position to have been in. But several years ago during the budget cuts, when we were looking at a number of mandates, our folks said, no, the weed inspection is too important, the impact on the lands is too great. That's actually a mandate they were willing to keep. So it doesn't happen often, but we appreciate it not being an unfunded mandate.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for the testifier? Representative Hansen. Excuse me, we do have a question. So, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Sewell, maybe this was touched on before I got here, but in the metro areas or other areas, are the mayors in some cases still the noxious weed inspectors under law?
Mr. Zulum.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, yes. Under statute, the town supervisors are the weed inspectors for townships and the mayors are for the cities unless otherwise delegated.
Right. Representative Hansen.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I want to, when I next meet with my mayors and my communities, I want to remind them that they have those responsibilities. If they're not, I see some thistles around, and so.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Sewell.
They're actually, I won't mention names, but a former member of this body who wanted to identify all weed inspectors by having us wear hot pink uniforms with the acronym Weed Inspecting Municipal Police.
Representative Hansen will carry that bill. I'm just teasing. Any other questions for the testifiers? Any other questions for the testifiers? Is there anybody else that would like to testify for or against this? Seeing none, any last words, Representative Swazinski?
No, I appreciate the opportunity to come before the committee. And whether you're a Democrat or Republican, you don't like noxious weed. So thank you.
Thank you. House File 1613 is laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Agriculture Finance Bill. Thank you. Next on the agenda, we have, what do we have? Representative Pearson. We have House File 1377. While we're waiting for Representative Pearson to get up front, is there anybody that would like to move the minutes dated for March 12th, 2015. Representative Daniels?
I so move the minutes.
Representative Daniels moves the minutes. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Daniels. President Pearson, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would like to move House File 1377.
All right. House File 1377 is moved by Representative Pearson. It's before us. Please explain your bill.
Well, my bill is, to sum it up in Chair Anderson's words, it's a good bill, and it's a good program that was from the chair of the Ag Finance Committee. But this bill, what this is essentially the state of Minnesota through the food shelves, and I know this is labeled as a bill by Second Harvest Heartland, but they're actually just the coordinator of it on behalf of the Feeding America food banks. So this isn't funding that goes directly to them, but they happen to orchestrate a lot of this, and we're very appreciative for that work. You'll notice in the handout there's six different food shelves within the state of Minnesota that receive liquid milk. And liquid milk is unique to food shelves in the fact that it's not something that people go when, you know, the Boy Scouts are coming around and they hang the plastic bag that you put food in for the food shelf. People don't grab a gallon of milk out of their fridge and put it in the Boy Scouts bag in those situations. It's rarely given as a private donation, but it's heavily sought after and in great demand. And, of course, we know all the nutritious benefits of dairy products and milk specifically. So this program is essentially already in existence, but the current funding only covers about a third of what the annual needs are for putting liquid milk on the food shelves. And to that, I'll turn it over to Laura Fedema, who's the Community Engagement Officer with the Second Harvest Heartland, and she can give you more of the specifics on how the program has worked and provided for those in need for many years.
All right. Thank you, Representative Pearson. Please state your name for the record and begin.
Thank you. My name is Laurel Fedema. I am the Chief Community Engagement Officer for Second Harvest Heartland. And with me also testifying is Tony Manns, Director of Food Sourcing for Second Harvest Heartland.
Welcome.
Thank you. I just want to reiterate the importance of this program. It's been around for a number of bienniums and is an extremely popular program with the food banks across the state who do administer it and get the milk to the food shelves, who then get it directly to clients. So what we're finding is that hunger is still a prevalent issue in Minnesota. And while the economy, a number of indicators show improvement, and that is true, we also know that there are a number of people, whether it's through onerous medical bills, medical conditions, extended unemployment, or lower employment, that there's still a great need across our food shelves and food banks in the state. And we see that when it comes to milk. It's one of the most highly requested items at our food shelves, and that's because it is highly nutritious, as we all know. Particularly families and parents ask for it. Seniors ask for it. About 33% of those served by the food shelves in the state are children, and so it's very, very high demand. And it is true that not very much gets donated, about 2% of the need. We have some very generous donors, but it's not an item that is typically donated. So we are here to ask for an increase to this program. The mechanics of it work very, very well. The administration of it works very, very well. But we're looking for an increase to $3 million that would cover the full need of milk for each biennium. And a number of food shelves in Minnesota, when they run out of milk, they run out and aren't able to replenish. And so we're looking at the ability to do that since it's a very highly requested item. Second Harvest Heartland does administer the program. The grant money is purchased from Minnesota milk producers on a low-cost bidding process, and we allocate the milk out to the food banks based on an agreed-upon allocation we use frequently among us based on number of people in poverty. And so the program is running very, very well. Last year we served about almost 200,000 gallons of milk were distributed through this program. So It's very, very popular. We continue to get calls from food shelves at Second Harvest saying, when's the milk grant going to start again? They call and call because their budgets are tight, and we know it doesn't last the full year, so we're starting to get calls already from our food shelves, at least at Second Harvest Heartland, wondering when the milk grant will start again. So with that,
thank you.
Mr. Chairman, would like to entertain any questions.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Fatima. We do have a question from Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing this. I think it's a great program, and I do appreciate what you're doing. I just have a real quick, just sort of an administrative question. I did the math, and the 11% for administrative expenses, that's $121,000 a year. So what are some of the things that money goes towards? What's some of the administrative overhead?
Sure.
Ms. Bettman.
Mr. Chair, representatives. I believe on this particular bill, the admin expense is 2%. We have another bill under consideration next on the agenda where the admin is a bit different. So for this bill, it is 2%, but happy to answer that question. That goes to help us process invoices and paperwork as the various food banks bring their paperwork to us. It allows us to process that. It also covers a bit of overhead for transportation and just staffing that it takes to move the milk, package it up, and distribute it from each of our warehouses as food banks back out to the food shelves.
Right. And thank you for the clarification.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I was looking at the wrong bill.
So. Right. And that's the next one. So
but,
thank you.
But I'll thank Mr. Chair.
Representative Pierce.
I'll thank Mr. Miller for pointing out what an efficient program that this is, operating at a 2% administrative cost. And when you look at the costs of milk, I do recognize that sometimes when you go into, like in my area, it's Quick Trip, and they offer a gallon of milk at $2.39. And I know this is put out as a low-cost bid, and the prices that they pay for their milk are listed here. So it's pretty competitive pricing that they're using. And, of course, it's not something that they have the existing infrastructure with trucks running to and from these facilities currently. So as I look at this is a great program offering a great product. And the only problem right now is that it's significantly underfunded, and this would provide it and hopefully fill the demand in a much stronger capacity.
Thank you, Representative Pearson. Ms. Fatima, maybe this is a question for you. Is there any, what would you call it, any shrinkage or spoilage, or how do you accommodate that with this being a product that could potentially expire? If you could just walk us through the logistics, please.
I'm going to let Tony Manns, our Director of Food Sourcing, answer that.
All right. Please state your name for the record, if you would,
sure,
please.
Sure. Tony Manns. I'm the Director of Food Sourcing for Second Harvest Heartland. So, Chair Hamilton and committee members, the milk that we get in is fresh from the dairies. We get actually milk in every day at our facility in Maplewood. I'm sorry, not every day. We get it 4 days a week. And so we turn it very, very quickly. And so it really has the same shelf life when it gets to our food shelves that it does at a grocery store. So the shrink, I think, is very, very little when we watch those code dates very closely.
All right. Thank you so much for that. We do have a question, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to the testifiers, and thanks in general to what you folks do. I had the opportunity 30 years ago to be on the board of the Echo Food Shelf in Mankato. And I remember we stored our food at that point in time, on a porch across the street, kitty corner from the community center. And now I see, the food shelf is growing and growing because there's just greater demand. I'm curious about the population that is using the food shelves. Do you folks have data on a demographic profile of the people who are accessing the food shelves? Any sense on wages? Are they minimum wage workers? Are they working? That sort of thing.
Ms. Fatima, would you like to take that one?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. That's a great question. I can give you a little bit of insight. Every year, every 4 years, Second Harvest Heartland participates in a very rigorous study sponsored by Feeding America across the nation. And we measure some of the questions that you're asking around who our food shelf visitors are. We did another study in 2014, and I can give you a few data points. Minnesota food banks serve about 623,000 people per year. As I said, more than 33% are children 0 to 18 years or older. About 64% of households have a member who've worked for pay in the past year, but their incomes tend to be very low. A significant portion have income of $20,000 or less, and that's about 69% of them. So while they may be employed, they're probably underemployed or sporadically employed. 31% of the households have a member with diabetes, as opposed to about 7% of Minnesotans overall. So there's some real health issues that are experienced by this population. And about 20% of households have at least one member who is a veteran that's actively deployed. One other data point, and then I'll close it out. We know from this research that food shelf clients need to make very, very tough decisions about how they're going to spend their money. They had to make tough decisions between food and things like housing. 62% chose to pay for their rent or their mortgage and then visited a food shelf to make ends meet. 69% chose to pay for transportation, whether that's public transportation or gas, and then didn't have enough money left for food. So that's a little bit about who we serve.
Yeah. Ripson Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, that data always alarms me, to be real honest with you. And I really compliment the milk producers and Second Harvest and Representative Pearson for this bill. I believe I'm a co-author on it, and I'm a strong supporter of this. But my dream, to be honest with you, is that we don't have food shelves. My dream is that we have wages in this state, and we have employment opportunities in the state that are the type that young families do not have to go to the food shelf, and or other folks too. And I'd say young families, because where I live, I think there's just too many young families that are on the brink of disaster. They face it day to day. And when this bill comes up, and yes, we need to help those folks, but the real help for those folks is higher wage jobs, benefits that they need in order to live a full lifestyle like my family does, and the families that are fully employed at livable wages. And these issues intersect real clearly for me, particularly with the food shelf. So I guess the challenge I think we have in this session of the legislature is not only to support the food shelves and these types of programs, but also to put forth a budget and to put forth an approach to dealing with the challenges of Minnesota that support these young families so they can live independently and support their families on their own.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. I love the passion, and I think we're going to have a nice agriculture bill that's going to be placing some investments and promotions as far as job growth, et cetera. So we'll do what we can in this committee as well. So, again, I really respect the passion. Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a clarification from the last testifier, and maybe I heard wrong, but he said that the milk comes, I don't know, directly from dairies and then is sent out to the food shelves. It must go to a processor first for pasteurization, correct?
Thank you. Mr. Manns.
Yes, Chair Hamilton and committee members, thank you for clarifying that. Yes, we do get it from the processors. I misspoke. So Dean Foods, Kemp's, whoever is the local provider.
Yeah, Chair Anderson. Thank you for the clarification. I thought we were going to have the raw milk debate again, so thank you so much for that. Any other questions for the testifiers? Any other questions? This is a public hearing. Anybody like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none. Any closing comments there, Representative Pearson?
Thank you, committee, for your time. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for scheduling the hearing, and I renew my motion to put forward House File 1377.
All right. House File 1377 is laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Agriculture Finance Bill. Thank you. Members, I'm next on the agenda, I believe. So we did have another bill that we pulled off the agenda. We have Representative Metza. You're looking really good today. Nice shirt, buddy. Representative
Metza. Mr. Chair, thank you. You as well.
We planned that. Representative Daniels, we'd like to chair the committee today. All right. So come on up, if you would, please.
Just as long to get to that. You know I love you.
You still have to have a suit or a suit.
Actually, I think I'm going to beat him.
Not if I get number one.
Thank you. Welcome so close. You bet.
Next bill on the agenda is House File 1107. Representative Hample, Chair Hamilton, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll move House File 1107 to be held over for possible inclusion. So.
Thank you. Okay, would you like to proceed with your bill, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this is appropriation to the Farm to Food Shelf Program. We're asking for some dollars to appropriate from the general fund to go, of course, to the Commissioner of Agriculture and then subsequently Second Harvest Heartland on behalf of six Feeding America food banks and serve Minnesota to compensate agriculture and producers and processors for the cost incurred around the harvest and packaging and transferring this product and get it to the food shelves. I think this is a wonderful program. Mr. Chairman, we do have some testifiers if we can call on them at this time.
Sure, that would be great. First testifier, please state your name for the record again.
My name is Laurel Fedema. I'm the Chief Community Engagement Officer at Second Harvest Heartland. And with me is Tony Manns, Director of Food Sourcing, Second Harvest Heartland.
Thank you. Go ahead with your testimony.
The Farm to Food Shelf grant was first appropriated in the last legislative session and is currently in force at $2 million over 3 years. We are ending the first year of this program with a lot of activity and success and are coming to you today to request, based on the enthusiasm, based on the produce generated, that this program be put in the base budget and be reoccurring. Because it's so important, particularly given the response we've had, to continue to move fresh and nutritious produce through the food shelf system in Minnesota. And we're looking for $1.1 million a year in the state's base operating budget and a couple other changes to the legislative language related to allowing us to move protein in addition to produce. And secondly, taking a look at the admin costs, which I can speak to in a little bit, we're asking for some increase in admin costs related to this program. But in general, the program we feel is very important. Food banking has come from a tradition of moving shelf-stable products that have been donated both by individuals and large food manufacturers, and we're continue to be really grateful for that. What we're finding is manufacturers get increasingly efficient, is that those types of donations are decreasing and becoming more limited. And at the same time, many of us in the community are realizing the importance of more fresh and nutritious food, which brings us to produce. We know in the state of Minnesota that there are several hundred million pounds that go to waste of edible crops in the state each year. And this program is a way to move some of that into the food system. Much of what is not used is not acceptable necessarily, for example, to commercial growers, but is still perfectly edible. Things happen with weather activity where, again, the crop is edible, but it may not look perfect. That's the type of food that we're moving into this system. It's designed to help farmers cover some of their marginal costs for picking and packing out produce from those fields and helping get ready for transfer. The food itself is donated, and then the food banks in Minnesota, again, Second Harvest and the five other Feeding America food banks, move that food to the food shelves. So donated food, but the dollars are going to help farmers recover some of their costs because it is expensive to pick and pack out produce from the field just to get it donated into the system. We've had some great experience in the past year. We believe by the end of the first contract year, which will be later this summer, we'll have moved about 5.4 million pounds of food, of produce of all different types, into the system, ranging from corn and lettuce and squash, potatoes, and a number of other produce items. The response from the food shelves has been phenomenal. We've had a number of community events throughout Minnesota where we've had what are called produce drops, where food shelves in partnership with community organizations will host big events, promote it, and bring very large numbers of folks who don't get a chance to purchase produce at a special event to access it. So there's a lot of great feedback. And we will hear from a couple testifiers later today to that effect. Second Harvest, again, with the other food banks, administers the program. And so we are taking that produce and making sure that it then gets stored properly. It needs to be moved quickly. So there's a lot of things involved in refrigeration and cooling and fast movement to get this produce to the food banks, then to the food shelves in time before it goes bad. And that's something that we're very committed to doing. We have spent a great amount of time marketing to farmers this past year. It is our first year. The contract went into effect in the middle of the last produce season, so we caught some of the farmers and are continuing to build awareness and really looking to our first full year of the program. But we did direct marketing to hundreds of edible crop farmers across the state. We also have worked through a number of organizations that reach farmers who are also very supportive of this bill, including the Minnesota Agri-Growth Council, Minnesota Farmers Union, who I know is here today, the Midwest Food Processors Association, Minnesota Healthy Kids Coalition, and the Partners to End Hunger. All are supportive of this bill, and many of whom have helped us directly get the word out to farmers about the program. We have a staff, as do other food banks, that then work directly with farmers to let them know. We visit farms, we talk to them about the program, as well as marketing to them on social media and through other means. And through that, we've been able to generate, like I said, about 5.4 million pounds of produce in the first 7 months of the program. We're still in the midst of the first year. If I could,
thank you, Mrs. Fedeman. I have one question from Representative Miller.
Don't worry, it's not the overhead question, because I understand the cost of overhead on this one. I had that totally blown up and made by mistake, so I apologize for that, Mr. Chair. But I'm just curious, what fascinates me is if you could just explain the distribution, not the distribution lines, the collection lines of how you get this stuff from the farms to what you're doing. Because, I mean, for-profit businesses, this is a huge mechanism that they have to put forth just to be profitable, and yet you're doing it in a nonprofit status, and I think that's amazing. So I understand how you get it out to the food shelves, but what's the basic process by which you get it from the farm to your distribution point?
Ms. Fedema?
And it can be a short answer. I just am really fascinated by this.
Thank you, Mr. Mann.
Mr. Chair, my name is Tony Manns. I'm the Director of Food Sourcing at Second Harvest Heartland. I could talk all day about this, so I'll try not to. But, you know, it is a very much a just-in-time process. And so we have trucks there's really two methods. We have trucks that go directly to the farms and pick it up. And luckily, a lot of them are along the Highway 10 area between here and St. Cloud, so that helps us a little bit. But we actually, in the summer, we lease two semi-trucks and have two temp drivers just to be able to pick it up as quickly and freshly as we need to. So it in some cases, you know, we pick it up and the same day. We pick it up the next day. Sometimes with one grower, we just have a truck that goes every day and picks up. So it's very fast and very quick, and freshness is really key to this.
Amazing. Thank you.
If I may, let me add also, mm-hmm. There are some instances where farmers, through us, via the administration, they contact us, they get everything straightened out paperwork-wise, and then actually deliver directly to the food shelves. So there are some cases where that's just more efficient, and we as food banks don't need to get involved in the transport, but we do the administration part of it.
Thank you. Chair Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, it's interesting. First of all, before I ask, I actually have a question for the testifiers. But before I do that, I'd be you know, totally out of line if I didn't recognize Representative Poppy. I believe she was the one that carried this bill last year, if I'm right? Carried this bill to start this program. And so it's a phenomenal program. And was it Senator Schmidt? Do you remember in the Senate? And then I also want to, a shout out or thank to Senator Tomasoni over there as well to help us secure some dollars for this. So I didn't point that out in my opening comments, but give credit where credit is due. So thank you. The testifiers talked about 5.4 million pounds. And my question to the testifiers is, prior to this program, what actually happened to that product? Did it lay in the field? Did it go to waste? if they could answer that question.
Thank you. Who wants to answer that one?
Mr. Chair, committee members, prior to this being implemented in the past year, we did run a pilot. We called it an ag surplus pilot, and it was done because of the availability of one-time grant dollars through some corporate grants that then went away. So we tested this program before we brought it to the legislature, and that happened for a couple years beforehand. Before that, there was no program. And so we've been ramping it up, learning, understanding what's out there, how to put this together in a manner that allowed us to launch it in this manner last year.
Thank you, Mrs. Fenneman. Any follow-up, Chair Hamilton? Okay. Next on us, we have Chair Anderson. Chair Anderson, do you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. You look good sitting up there, too, by the way.
You don't see my knees shaking. That's
No, you're doing very well. I, too, was going to thank Chair Poppe for carrying this last year. And, you know, a lot has been said the last few weeks or months about farmers, but this makes me proud to be a farmer. The farmers are stepping up and donating some of their crop that may otherwise go to waste, and they're helping out with this great program. So I would just say also thanks to the farmers that are taking part in this program. The question I had then, you mentioned in your first year of the program, was the bill that Chair Poppe carried last year, was it one-year funding, two-year funding? How does that all shake out here?
Ms. Fedela?
Mr. Chair and committee members, to answer that question, the current legislation is $2 million over 3 years, ending at the end of the legislative year 2017. And then it ends. So the current law in effect will end in 2017. The total grant amount was $2 million. I hope that answers your question.
One more?
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. So this is additional funding, at least in the year 2016, on top of the original grant, correct?
Mr. Chair, that's a great question. I think what we're looking for is not in addition to, but what we're really concerned about is that this program continues, and so the ask could be a replacement in 2016, not in addition to. Or it could go in force in 2017 based on the pleasure of the legislature. But the key for us is $1.1 million a year, and that it continue based on the tremendous response we've had.
Thank you. Follow-up? Okay. Representative Clark, did you have a question for the testifier?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I'm familiar with your program, and it's a great program. I wanted to ask you if the cost of transportation is, I just on line 1.10, it talks about costs incurred to harvest and package. But I know for some of the small farmers, transportation really is an issue. Is that something that could be included there?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I think our answer to that is that we do pick up an awful lot of produce. For those that turn it into us, we are asking in this new version of the bill for a 4% transportation fee that could either be reimbursed to farmers, or it would allow us to then further pick up where we're not able to now to address that issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was what I was wondering. So it is flexible that you would be able to help those little farmers that have that issue. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Well, yes.
We do have another testifier, a farmer, if we could call him up at this time if there's no other questions for the testifier.
Two more questions.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Can we do that real quick?
Yes. Thank you, Mr.
All right. Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I guess I'm seeing this issue in a larger context today, and so I have yet another larger context. Again, thanks for all you do, and thanks for supporting the Echo Food Shelf and other food shelves in St. Peter, et cetera. The other day, I had a long conversation with public health workers in Nicollet County. And they explained how there's a challenge, especially with young mothers and young families, of how to use fresh foods in their cooking. And that there's a lot of young families they've identified in our county that haven't really experienced it, haven't been taught at home how to do that. And so one of the initiatives they have in our county is to actually teach young families that are probably using our food shelves how to use fresh food in their cooking. Are you seeing that? Is that isolated to Nicollet County, or do you see that statewide that need to teach young families how to cook and use fresh foods?
Ms. Fatima?
Mr. Chair and committee members, we are seeing a tremendous amount of enthusiasm from local food shops across the state in all corners of the state regarding this issue. And there's a lot of creative things happening at the community level with nutrition education for food shelf clients. And we see that taking so many different forms. But a couple examples would be there's food shelves working on merchandising the food inside a food shelf with suggestions on how to prepare food. There's other food shelves that display food with recipes attached. There's education seminars happening. There's canning classes that some food shelves have. It really runs the gamut, and there's a lot of interest and activity from the food shelf sector on this.
I believe Representative Miller has an answer for that.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and sorry to interrupt, but I worked on a project in Wilmer that included Extension, and Extension has teaching kitchens where they do exactly that. The one in Wilmer is a beautiful, beautiful kitchen. And I believe that I can't tell you how many more there are throughout the state at some of the some of the extension offices, but I know that they're doing that throughout the state as well.
And Ms. Chairman,
Representative Johnson.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
And Ms. Chairman and Representative Johnson, to that point too, we heard some wonderful testimony around Representative Clark's bill on urban agriculture, and they're talking not only about growing the food, but about. Cooking, it's canning, et cetera, et cetera. So it's all across the state, Representative Johnson. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to mention that my county folks mentioned that the State Health Improvement Plan, the SHIP programs, are really central to their efforts to make sure that folks are learning this. And I'm sure that kind of funding is coming up elsewhere, and those of you who are, we're all supportive of this program, we should also consider being supportive of the SHIP program to help young people, help young families figure out how to take advantage of that produce. We eat better, we're healthier, and there's a lot of good things could come from that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnson.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I think I might be carrying that bill. I'm not sure I'd be looking
through it. Any other questions from the committee, or is a public hearing, so we could ask for public. Oh, we have two testifiers.
Mr. Chairman, yes, we do have a couple more testifiers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's Green Day today.
Must be.
Hey, welcome to our committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Well, thank you. My name is Eric Nathy, and I'm a second-generation farmer in Elk River, Minnesota, with Riverside Farms, owner and operator of the farm. I'm here today to tell you guys my story with Second Harvest. Our family farm was started in 1980 by my dad and my uncle. And I started with Second Harvest in 2012 before this bill, which I think is a great, great bill and a great benefit for the people that are using the food and us as farmers. In 2012, I lost my father to a rare blood disease, and I kind of had to take over everything myself. In August 6th of 2012, I had a tremendous hailstorm. Now, our community, or the general public, 95% of them, I'm going to say this, you guys might agree with me, might disagree. We eat with our eyes. If things aren't picture perfect, we're not going to pick it up off the shelf at the grocery store. This hailstorm put me almost at the point of where we, after 35 years of business, we had to close. For 30 years of business, we were going to close the farm. All of our produce that we had, things were coming in, things were being harvested at the same time. We still had stuff later on in the season to be harvested that did not get hit by the hail all that bad. Heidi Coe at Second Harvest called me and asked if there's anything I could do to help them out. And I said, at this time I don't think so, because I don't know if my stuff's good enough for consumption. Later on, after talking with my uncle, we found out that, hey, it's still good enough for consumption, let's try it. We tried, a truckload, and it ended up working out. It worked out great to where I was able to keep my employees around, keep them employed for the season until the rest of our product came in and we were able to harvest the rest of our product. biggest issue is quality, is moving on. It's not always quality, it's also quantity. As a farmer, we don't raise for this program. We raise for ourselves to make a living. And if there's product that we can't move, we disc it under. With this program, it's able to give me the funding to help pay for those wages that I'd normally lose, and to get the product out to people that can use it and consume it. If people can use it and consume it, there's just it makes me feel good that, hey, I'm not putting this product to waste. We throw away more product than I think that even gets used anywhere else. There's a huge waste, but if there's use for it, it's a great added bonus, I think. And it makes me feel good that there's a use for it. I'm not just running the disc over it, discing it under, and saying, hey, there's 10 acres of sweet corn, or there's 5 acres of sweet corn that I'm just going to put back into the ground. Yes, there's some added benefit to that, but also there's a huge loss by doing that, too.
Thank you, Mr. Nahe. Thank you for your testimony. Our condolences on your father.
Thank you.
That was a tough thing to do, to go through.
It is.
And then take over the family business. It's extremely difficult, and thank you for doing that.
Mr. Chairman, we do have one other testifier as well.
Can you state your name for that?
Shay Morris, Executive Director of Second Harvest Northern Lakes Food Bank. And I'm here today representing, of course, Second Harvest, which serves the northeastern Minnesota tier, or the Arrowhead region, as we're more often referred to. So we're a peer food bank of Second Harvest Heartland here in St. Paul. Farm-to-food shelf has had tremendous impact and value, not only in our food bank in northeastern Minnesota, but our agency partners, including the food shelves that serve the Arrowhead region of northern Minnesota. In addition to that, the people, of course, that are served by our local food shelves. As you are probably aware, the Arrowhead region does not have a lot of fresh produce to draw from. So we really depend on the generosity and support of Minnesota farmers to provide our region with that fresh and nutritious supply of fresh produce. Last year, thanks to the legislative support and, of course, Farm to Food Shelf, we were able to increase our distribution of food to 1.2 million pounds of this product. And that's just in northeastern Minnesota. For us, that resulted in about 316,000 additional daily servings of fruits and vegetables for the people that we serve in northeastern Minnesota, including many families, children, and seniors. I think we can all, you know, realize the impact of fresh nutrition or fresh produce on our health and nutrition. Within our food bank up in Duluth, we also have a food shelf. So we provide direct service to about 880 families per month. As part of our service, and it's typically to Hermantown residents or those north of where we reside. And we had Tom, who is a senior, come in, and Tom lives on a fixed income. And when he was leaving one day from the food shelf, he said to a volunteer, "You guys are a lifesaver. This program is a lifesaver." He went on to share that he had suffered a lot of health issues. He was on a fixed income. And really the only fresh produce that he accessed on a month-to-month basis was from our food bank, and how grateful he was for the variety that he was provided. And to hear him say it was a lifesaver was really a profound statement, you know, for our volunteers and for our food bank overall. You know, Laurel touched a little bit on the mobile food pantry program. In response to all of the additional produce that we received last year as part of this initiative, we had to expand our mobile food pantry program. So we mobilized more trucks in more communities. We collaborated with more food shelves to make sure that people had access to this food resource. And it grew in such popularity that there was so much excitement at these drops that we would have families that were calling other families, other neighbors, and saying, boy, you could qualify for this fresh produce, which resulted in wonderful traffic issues that we had around the block. You know, certainly running out of produce, which we didn't expect. So we made sure that when we went out back again into those communities, we were armed with additional produce, additional products, so no families left without any product. We also had a little boy, I think he was a third or fourth grader, who came to a mobile food pantry distribution site. His mom was home with their infant brother or sister, and he was sent to the site to get produce for their family. And we do have nutrition educators, and we have volunteers that are there with recipes and telling, you know, normally families or adults how to make fresh produce. But this little boy was taking cabbage, and he got fresh tomatoes and eggplants, and of course he was thrilled with the purple eggplant. But he said to us, boy, my mom will be so excited. She loves to make salads, and this is just great food to have. So to hear that from, you know, third or fourth grade boy at one of these sites was just amazing. Our produce reached 15 communities in northeastern Minnesota, from Moose Lake up to Ely and from Hibbing over to Two Harbors. So we know that it had broad reach in northeastern Minnesota, as it has in other parts of the state. And I know it's easy to measure that impact on our food bank because we see the food go in and the food go out. But again, to hear a senior say it's a lifesaver, to hear a child say my mom will be so happy, is really the true measure of this legislation's success. So I just want to thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Ms. Morris. Any questions from the committee? Chair Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Nathy, or comment. First of all, thank you for taking part in the program. And from where you said you live, I assume you probably irrigate and you raise sweet corn. But as you mentioned, that a hailstorm doesn't care what kind of field, it can destroy any field. So just curious, when you grow that specialty crop, how much do you dare contract ahead of time, taking into account the vagaries of farming, hailstorms, that type of thing? How do you market, and would some of that excess then be available for this kind of a program?
Mr. Yeah.
Sir Chair and representatives, I don't contract anything out. I kind of grow on what I've raised year to year. We have discussed about contracting some things out. It's the tough thing with contracting things out is the weather. I mean, Mother Nature is my first and foremost friend and enemy. I do irrigate. Our farm lies on Highway 10 in Elk River, right along the Mississippi River. So all of our irrigation comes from there. And we do have a few wells on a few of the other pieces that we farm. Contracting is a tough thing. It's something more and more that my customers want to see me do, and I'm slowly working on that and learning that side of the business. Contracting is more for that large grower out in California that is supplying the whole country on a weekly, daily basis almost all year long. And we're in such a short window of time frame. We could contract, but it doesn't necessarily mean the product's going to move. Sweet corn, for example, is contracted by numerous growers, and I've done a little bit of dabbling in that. But if the country is so heavily saturated, it doesn't move, even though it is contracted. So there's other parts and regions of the country that find their way up into our neck of the woods, and it's tough to move that product. And when it's tough to move that product, if Second Harvest can move it and I can help donate it, and the biggest thing is the labor costs are getting astronomical right now for a farmer.
Thank you, Mr. Nathy. A follow-up, Chair Anderson?
Oh, just a quick one. Again, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think your testimony illustrates that for all of the modern technologies we have in agriculture, a lot of it still boils down to Mother Nature and the hand she deals us throughout the crop year. But again, thank you for doing what you do, and thanks for taking part in the program.
Thank you. Representative Bennett, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for the Second Harvest testifier, and I can't remember your name. I'm sorry. What's your name?
Shay Morris.
All right, thank you. Just curious, I volunteer for an organization in my local community called Ruby's Pantry. Is that connected to Second Harvest at all, or is that totally?
Mr. Chair and committee members, that program is independent of the Second Harvest food banks. They operate actually independently.
Okay, thank you.
So not affiliated.
Thank you. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nathy, thanks. Thanks to everybody for their involvement in the program. I've spent the last 10 or 12 years being a crop hail adjuster, so I know a little bit of what you're going through. I do have a question. In the contracts that you're aware of, is there an act of God clause in those contracts that gives you an out in case of a hailstorm or some other natural disaster?
Mr. Chair and representatives, on that I do not know. But I do know a few other farmers that I work with, and we're all pretty tight-knit because there's very few of us. And that I know of, that I deal with, I don't think there is an act of God clause. I know there's times where I've helped other farmers fill their contracts. So they're bound to those contracts. They got to find that stuff. And it can be tough because you never know what quality could be. And that's the biggest issue with a lot of the distribution houses and grocery store chains is they want that top quality product. So I hope that answers your question on that.
Thank you, Mr. Nathie. We have one more question. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is very heartwarming to hear the outcome from last year. And it was a very bipartisan effort last year, and we were thankful to be able to receive some funding. I very much appreciate continuing the effort to try to get it into the base. So it's ongoing funding, and that's kind of critical at this point to allow the farmers like yourself to continue to participate. You want to be able to know that this is going to be coming into the future. So thank you for what you've done. I think when you said we eat with our eyes, that's such a profound statement, because absolutely, when we go to the grocery store, you know, you expect the cucumbers to be a certain size and to, you know, the apples to be a certain color and all of those kinds of things. So the fact that I know last year when we were hearing testimony, you know, you could see the pictures of maybe something that just looked a little different, maybe had a different shape to it. It was something that we can all benefit. And this was, to me, something that last year we heard a lot about how this was impacting every part of the state. And you continue to talk about that with the fact that we had food insecurity. And, you know, I'm glad that we're not so much talking as much about the food insecurity. We're actually talking about what the solution is. And that's just a better place to be, because we all, and it was really insightful last year, we each got a map from our district. I think if you served on the committee, we got a map from the district talking about what kind of food insecurity there was. And this goes back to Representative Johnson's question about the demographics. And it was startling to know how many people were actually needing to go to a food shelf because they weren't able to meet their food needs within their family. And so I appreciate that you're continuing to do that. And it does touch every corner of the state. It is last year, and it will continue to be. This is a feel-good, do-good bill, and I'm glad that Representative Hamilton, that we're carrying this forward, and let's hope that we can get some funding in the base. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Poppy. One more question, I believe, from Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to thank the farmer testifier. I forget your name, too. It's
Eric Nathie.
You know, thanks for coming. And, you know, and I think this has been your testimony has been just a really healthy reminder of the distinct challenges facing farmers, especially when you're talking about you're at the mercy of the weather and some of the challenges you face. I think it's even more particularly a challenge of the fresh produce farmers and the challenges you face there's some distinct, unique challenges you face. And so I think it's good to hear this in this committee, but I'm going to challenge this committee, the members of this committee, to spread this word with our colleagues who aren't as familiar with this distinct nature of farming, because I think that's part of how we need to build understanding as we move forward with approaching agricultural issues. There are distinct issues facing producers that are just different than other businesses and other economic enterprises face in Minnesota, and I guess it's part of our responsibility to make sure we all understand that now. So thanks.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Another question from Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, it's not so much a question as just a piece of information that I've become aware of in the last year. Haven't used it yet, but and I'm just wondering if our farmer knows about this. I know the USDA now has a crop insurance program available for farmers like you and others who are small produce farmers. And the deadline for applying for it is May 31st, coming right up for this past season. So I just wanted to mention that. And it seems to me like one of the synchronizing things here is, so you've lost a crop, or if you lost a crop, you still can donate to Second Harvest Heartland. And it seems like the gap between what you might get for that which this bill and others help provide, could help fill that gap from that insurance program. So I just wanted to bring that up because, yes, finally we have some recognition of the real risks that produce farmers take, and that's pretty new. So I just wanted to mention that.
Thank you, Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Clark, thank you for that as well. And going back to what Chair Anderson had talked about, the contracts that I'm familiar with, we always did have a force majeure clause in there, an act of God, so that way it would protect the producer as well. So I'd encourage people when they're negotiating contracts that they are able to get some additional protection there.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Hamilton. Does anyone wish to testify for or against House File 1107?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, go ahead.
I can't imagine anybody testifying against this bill.
We get that escorted out, right? Chair Hamilton, do you have any closing comments?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. And once again, Chair Poppe, thank you for carrying this bill forward. It's a wonderful program, as you've heard. I want to thank all the testifiers as well for doing a wonderful job making this become a reality and making sure that this is working and we're getting the product to those who need it. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll renew my motion to have this held over for possible inclusion.
Thank you. Thank you for the testifiers. And House File 1107 is laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Agricultural Finance Bill. And we'll do that. And then we have a couple announcements. Thursday, March 26, 2015, next meeting. And GOP members of this committee will meet immediately in room 400. And it's south, 400 south. With that, I believe we are adjourned.